everyone's riding horses, and you build a car, but then you govern it so that the car can only go as fast as a horse can run. And there's a reason that cars look like cars, not metal horses
right.
with wheels.
Right.
So that's isokinetic. It's a different thing. It's a better thing.
I was training for a long time, 10 years, using a lot of the great technology we use, getting into the HIIT camp. As soon as I started training on isokinetic, using a DEXA scan, not skin calipers, I gained 10 pounds of muscle in 6 months. And when I brought that up to this group, it's like, yeah, we don't know what to do with that yet. So
the orderly dropout of fibers is on a FastFit machine. Right away, every single muscle fiber that can be voluntarily recruited is voluntarily recruited. It's active. High levels of mechanical tension at maximum motor unit recruitment. Every single rep on a FastFit machine is a stimulating rep. It's matched all the time to you. So you can go as heavy as you want for as long as you want. All roads lead to Rome, but once you get there, how strong are you? Seasoned lifters who are at that stage where they're doing a pound a year would be great. All of a sudden, they try something like FastFit, an isokinetic device, new levels of mechanical loading applied through their muscle fibers, tendons, ligaments, and all of a sudden they start growing again. The results arrive more rapidly, and it's a greater magnitude, and you end up in a better place at the end.
What we are going to talk about in a future episode is sort of why it's really important that you do have as much muscle as you can as you age. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to call this episode two.
Episode two.
Episode two.
Let's start again. You ever start again?
We need to start over.
Spring cleaning, start fresh.
It's May, right? So, well, when we're recording this, you're going to see this some other time.
Yeah, this will be seen sometime in the fall, possibly 2028.
In the future.
In the future.
Coming to you from the future. And so that marks like a year plus of our podcast?
A year plus. Yeah.
Heck yeah.
That's wild. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
Look at us.
Yeah.
Huh? Who would have thought?
A lot of people owe a lot of other people money. So, betting against us here. So, but in the last episode, the reason I'm calling this part two is because we wrapped up talking about why the exercise is adaptive resistance and why the technology is not adaptive. It's isokinetic constant movement. And then we sort of like left it in a place where if I was listening to that, it's like, well, what about you even talked about weights? So let's dive a little bit more into technology. Right now, there are a lot of machines on the market. We've talked about this in a prior episode. And they're doing all kinds of fun and funky things. What seems to be most popular is what people are referring to as digital weights. And digital weights would be like the tonal devices, right? You can go to the screen, you can select 5 pounds, and it acts like it's 5 pounds. And I believe the technical word for that is isotonic.
Isotonic.
Isotonic. Yep. And so what I understand the difference to be is isokinetic keeps moving no matter the force. Isotonic, same force, no matter the speed. Just like a weight. It's going to be 5 pounds, no matter how fast I am. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about the difference and then why isokinetics, ironically, even though they might be less intelligent, because it's pretty hard to make an isotonic device, are better.
So isotonic and isokinetic. Iso meaning same, and then tonos, the Latin tonos, tension or tone, tonus. So the idea is if I am lifting 225, it's 225 the whole time. It's the same level of tension the whole time on the user. So that's what a weight is. Technically, a weight is isotonic. So it's a muscle extending and contracting, lengthening and shortening with the same tension, the same level of tension. So then there's obviously we've talked about the problems with that. It's either inefficient or dangerous, respectively. You can never really get matched with the resistance to your level of momentary strength unless you hit failure right at the end. That's the only time you're matched. And so that's why isokinetics were created. Iso being the same, kinetic, kinesis, motion, same motion. The rate of speed is the same. The velocity is the same. So then people, and it's like a weird fork in the road that was taken, and it's always been very, very funny to me when people will spend millions and millions and millions of dollars creating digital weight. They have a motor, and they have mechanisms. They have patented special things they've created. They spent years on this to replicate what a weight does. Now, that's odd. The good news is that they have, all of them, I believe, at this point, have modes whereby you can select a certain amount of weight on the positive, let's say, and a certain amount of weight on the negative that's greater,
right,
which acknowledges one of the mismatch problems. There's three of them. One of them is that there's a big difference unaccounted for with weights between how much you can lift and the heaviest weight that you could control the descent of.
Yeah.
So that's good. That's better. That's better than a weight is because it allows you to get more mechanical tension, so you have a greater stimulus. But the problem is anytime a user can select the resistance that's being set, and this goes for any type of resistance. Anytime the user can select the resistance, it's not going to match the user.
Just like walking up and grabbing a certain weight in the gym.
Right? Yeah.
You're now doing that on a screen.
Correct. Same exact thing. You're just doing it on a screen. You don't have to put the pin in the stack. You just press a button. But the machines are very much like everyone's riding horses, and you build a car, but then you govern it so that the car can only go as fast as a horse can run.
Right. You're replicating a horse with very expensive modern technology.
Right. And there's a reason that cars look like cars, not metal horses
right.
with wheels.
Right.
Right. So they're different. So that's isokinetic. It's a different thing. It's a better thing.
And this thing happens because, and we've talked about this. You gave me a great book on it a while back. Because we went into this technology with the same paradigm.
Right.
Nobody took a step back to ask, what is the best way to exercise? What's most important about exercise, which I want to go to in a moment, because that continues to evolve, right? Years ago, it was damage, and then it might be damage and fatigue, and then it's damage, fatigue, and stimulus, and now it's pretty much stimulus, and
right.
which is great for the isokinetic explanation.
Right, this is great for us, the way everything's turning.
Yeah, so then you see this, so you go in and create this technology and this machine with that sort of paradigm, which is really expensive. What you said earlier, and we know a little bit about this now, is not only do you have all these motors and gearboxes, but you have this firmware that's trying to read, like, no matter what Jim does to this rope or machine, I've got to stay at 5 pounds. That's complicated.
Right.
Yeah.
It takes a lot to stay at the same weight as a user moves through a range of motion.
Right.
Hundreds of sense force readings in the load cell per second, micro adjustments. It's all very complex. And ours is just like, burp.
Right, exactly.
It doesn't need any micro adjustments at all. It just moves like an inexorable wall. And that's what allows it to provide the momentary changing resistance automatically.
And so this next thing will probably change, but there's something else that we've seen over time is that whenever you're trying to mimic a weight digitally, and you're focusing on isotonic, because of the firmware and because of the motor limitations and because of the gearbox ratios and things like that, you can only apply so much force. So that's why these Tonals spent a long time, no diss on Tonal, developing their first machine, and it could do 200 pounds. Yeah. And then 2 years later, millions of dollars in development, and now they're at 250, right?
Nice.
So we're far away from somebody's max strength.
That's an expensive arm day.
Yes.
I would say.
And so back to your story a moment ago, somebody walks in to the gym, they pick a weight. Now they have this new machine, they're still selecting a weight. And then we got to the point where we said, oh, I know what we'll do. Because it's digital, we can have the eccentric be stronger than the concentric. Right. And then when they get weaker, because the technology is cool, it's cool technology, we can do drop sets. We can lower the resistance. And so you're starting to like take some of the more complicated things about weights that are laborious and then put them into software and mirror it without still just going to isokinetic. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, and they're solving problems, but I think every time you solve a problem in that way, a new problem is revealed, the solution for which you do not have. It's like Arthur Jones with the cams, solved partially that problem of different leverages at different moment arms, different joint angles. But the problem is, I got a room full of people using the same Nautilus cam for, let's say, the chest press, but everyone's leverages are just slightly different. The dynamic change in their amount of force, it's a little bit different. So, and then the other problem with the digital weight, they run into the same thing where, okay, you can have more on the negative than the positive. That's cool. But did you know that as you progress through a set of exercise, the ratio, the relationship between the negative and the positive strength capacity, it changes every rep. So even if you did 100 pounds and 140, it would, and you got it perfectly right for this person, it would instantly be wrong on the second repetition because your concentric strength fatigues and is reduced at a greater rate than your eccentric capacity to produce force, your eccentric strength. So it's like this, and then it gets wider as you go, and it gets wider to a different degree every time. So how are you going to guess right? How are you going to program that into your digital weight? There's no way to do it.
And even that thing that happens differently for each person.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. And differently for different muscle groups.
Right.
Because the legs are a little bit more slow twitch. They can endure for longer. But shoulders, chest, every muscle group has a different mix of fibers. And every person has a different mix of fibers. So, the non-contractile elements of the muscle are of different thickness and capacity to absorb force in different people for different reasons. So you can't account for all these. So it's a step in the right direction. But again, it's the old paradigm
right.
of I'm going to select this. I'm going to select this. And like you said, when it starts to slow down, let's say, and the velocity slows down, boop, we're going to knock that down. But do you still have the same ratio of negative to positive? You shouldn't, because it needs to probably be wider. You need to be even lighter on the concentric than you might imagine. But they would never know that because, yeah, how much?
Based on each person.
2.78%. How are you going to calculate that? Or you just put a motor on it and have it go back and forth and it does it perfectly every time for every person.
And so this is why we are all in on FastFit. We've been talking about this. We'll talk about this in a future episode. What's next? We have a lot of members listening to this that are in our Nautilus studios. And so again, in a moment, we'll talk about why, if you're using weights, which I would say are much, why have we not put in digital weights in our Nautilus studios?
Right.
Because weights actually don't have that limitation of being maxed out at 200 pounds. And because
the weight stacks on the Nautilus machines are a lot more robust.
That's right. Yeah. And our trainers are very good at selecting and learning and coaching people over time through those stimulus. So I want you to talk a little bit about the stimulus part of the triangle again, if you don't mind. And then remind our members sort of, A, why we're all in on Isokinetic, and we've started flipping some studios in Houston, and why, while they wait, the Nautilus machines are still very effective, even compared to, say, a Tonal.
Yeah, absolutely. So the primary determinant of the exercise stimulus, the primary element, the priority, is mechanical tension, mechanical loading. Quick example, if I had a chain hanging from the ceiling holding a 10-pound weight, we could say that there's 10 pounds of mechanical tension on each link in the chain. It's traveling through the chain. So when you contract a muscle, the muscles are connected to tendons, and those tendons are connected to the bones. That's why the muscles move the limbs. It pulls on the bone when you contract a muscle, and force is produced. That's a pulling force. There's also compressive force, and that's when you are in a pushing movement rather than a pulling movement. But the point is, mechanical tension is either pulling on through the muscle or pushing, compressive force. But that's the main determinant of the stimulus. So you need to load the body. And with weights, the load is sort of, it's better than nothing, and it works if given enough time. But the more mechanical loading you can get, the better. So the Nautilus cam allows you to get heavier weights than you could have lifted in the first place, because the cam, that is a special shaped pulley, and the chain's wrapped around the pulley, and it changes the leverages of the weight stack of whatever you've selected. So the idea is it's heavier where you're stronger, and it's lighter where you're weaker. So you get to do more with the muscles. So the Nautilus,
which was a very intelligent technology in the 70s and 80s, and it's why it's still today people talk about it.
Right, yeah, and it worked. And so the reason it worked was because it more closely matched the resistance that is being applied to the user with the amount of force momentarily that that user was able to produce. Mm-hmm. The closer you get to this match, the better the stimulus is going to be.
Give an example of how that would work differently if I just grabbed a barbell and I'm doing a bicep curl.
Yep. So if you're doing a bicep curl, let's say your maximum you can lift one time is 100 pounds. And you know, because you heard this podcast, that mechanical tension is the main stimulus for muscle strength and muscle growth. So you selected 100 pounds, and you do a rep, and you cannot complete a second one. Huh. Well, that's not enough, is it? So it's not just tension. You also need some mechanical work to be accumulated, but tension's the main thing. But if I go too heavy, I can't go for long enough. So what we do in weightlifting is we select, typically it's expressed as a percentage of our one rep max. So we have to compromise. We have to sacrifice mechanical loading just so we can have a set that lasts of a sufficient duration. So we would do 70 pounds or 65 pounds. So my strength is here, but I choose this weight on purpose. And then I slowly fatigue all the way down to the failure moment where I'm going as hard as I can, but the weight is not moving. And this is the only time where we have that perfect match between the resistance and my momentary strength.
Right.
So that's good, but you need to do all this preamble to get to the good stuff. And in the meantime, you've been underloaded, which means you've been inefficient.
And if you're doing this exact thing with the 65 pounds on a Nautilus machine, though, you're saying because of the cam, you're getting a better stimulus than if you were using a 65-pound barbell.
Correct.
Because
yeah, it's 65 here, but then where you're stronger, maybe it's 85. Mm-hmm. At your strongest part of the range, maybe it's 90. Mm-hmm. Because you can control in the strong ranges a way heavier weight than you could have lifted just without it, just a barbell. So the idea is the 65 pounds of dumbbells that I'm lifting, it's 65 pounds the whole time. But on a Nautilus machine, it's 65 pounds where I'm weak through my worst range of motion, my weakest part of the range, and it's 80, 90 pounds where I'm strong. So we get more mechanical loading. So it's a better stimulus, a greater magnitude of stimulus, which is why the Nautilus machines work better than a weight. The muscles don't know any difference. They just contract or not. And they have mechanical tension going through them like the chain in the ceiling, or they don't. And the magnitude of that tension is the determining factor of the magnitude of the stimulus.
I'm training, and I have some of these. If I'm training on a Nautilus machine today, or if a member listening to this is training on a Nautilus machine, it is a much... You're getting more effective stimulus than the equivalent in, say, a barbell.
Correct. Yeah.
Which is great. And yep. with
it's
our
also,
methodology.
It's also a lot safer.
It's also a lot safer. Yeah. Right. So it gets you, I'm going to spill my coffee all over this
just
table.
So excited about it.
I guess it's safer. Yeah. okay, brilliant. So, but why are we all in? Because we've gotten pretty far with this Nautilus.
That sounds pretty good. What are we doing with the laser machine?
Exactly.
It was a step in the right direction, a big step. The reason, again, that it was a step in the right direction is because Arthur Jones devised a way to more closely match the resistance that's administered to the user to the user's strength. Cool, got it. I mentioned before how different people have different changes in strength based on limb lengths and tendon insertions and all sorts of different leverages internally. So I can't really make one pulley, one cam that fits everybody. So it's generally the right direction, but it's not quite perfect for everyone, and it also doesn't account for the other two ways that our strength changes during a set of exercise, and they are negative to positive. You can control the descent of a far heavier weight than you could have lifted in the first place. And then from the beginning to the end of the set, I'm fresh and strong at the beginning, but I have to underload myself, so I'm not matched to my strength,
right.
Purposely underload myself. And even with a Nautilus machine, it's the same up as it is down, and it's the same at the beginning of the set as it was at the end. Same weight, same cam, same everything. So with isokinetic devices, all three of the ways that our strength changes during exercise are accounted for and addressed right away, instantly, for every person, regardless of any variable. So when you are pushing with your voluntary maximum contraction, and the machine is equal and opposite, giving you back whatever it is you're pushing, it is always matched. You don't have to do this process to get to that match part. It's matched resistance right away from the very first moment of contraction.
For a long time, building up fatigue during that time, right. So it's a dangerous game there, right? To try to recruit more and more muscle fibers, you're fired up.
Coined a term years and years ago. You've heard of the orderly recruitment of muscle fibers. That's where, as you begin to lift a weight, muscle fibers from the slowest and slow twitch and fast twitch in general, it's just the slow twitch, less force production, but more endurance. Fast twitch in general would be higher force production, but they fatigue faster. Mm. So these are the differences. So it starts with the slower twitch and only uses as fast of twitch muscles as necessary to lift the weight. But as you begin to fatigue a little bit, now stronger and stronger muscle fibers are called in because of fatigue. And then at the very end, it's all hands on deck.
Right.
But, so they say, high intensity training, with lower weights, it does recruit the fastest twitch muscle fibers. But by that time, you are systemically wiped. You're breathing hard, your heart rate's going, so you're not at your best to work your biggest, strongest muscle fibers. Sure, you might stimulate them, but it's not the same as what we've experienced with isokinetic devices where whenever we're ready with our fresh strength, using our fastest of the fast twitch muscle fibers. So the term I coined was the orderly dropout of fibers.
Nice.
The orderly dropout of fibers is on a FastFit machine. Right away, every single muscle fiber that can be voluntarily recruited is voluntarily recruited. It's active. So it's what the stimulating reps model would say is important. High levels of mechanical tension at maximum motor unit recruitment. Those are the two stipulations to have an effective rep, a stimulating rep, for the purpose of strength and hypertrophy. Well, every single rep on a FastFit machine is a stimulating rep in that case.
Right.
So the idea is it's matched all the time to you, so you can go as heavy as you want for as long as you want, and it accommodates all three of the ways our strength changes. The negatives and the positives, that's accounted for. From the beginning, I'm at my maximum to the beginning, and the orderly dropout of fibers occurs because the fast twitch, they're real strong, but they drop out fast. And so the fastest twitch, they drop out. As I continue, the next fastest. As I continue, the next fastest. Until finally I'm left, and you see it on the graph at the end, the strength goes way down. That's because the only people left are the slower twitch muscle fibers that can still endure, that still have the capacity to produce force. Yeah. So we have the orderly dropout of fibers, and the important part about that is you are fresh and ready to rock when you work your fastest twitch fibers. Instead of fatigued, circling the drain, it's the end of the set, and you're wiped. So that's why Nautilus is better than a weight, but they are both gravity-based forms of resistance. So with isokinetics, you don't have any of those drawbacks, and you have things that are possible using an isokinetic device that are unavailable with any other type of resistance.
Which is why, back to part one of this episode, it's adaptive resistance, and you just don't get adaptive resistance without that technology. It's why isotonic is really cool, and it solves a lot of things you try to do with weights, like more negatives and more loading on the eccentric, which is the same thing, and drop sets when you get fatigued. But we always talk about, I won't use names, but I was in a conversation a while back, and this person studies exercise, and their team is really great and really smart. And at some point, it would be great to have them work on what I'm about to say. But the comment was, over time, all roads lead to Rome, meaning the equipment doesn't really matter. And in some way, that's technically true. Maybe you won't get as far into Rome as you would otherwise, but at some point, if you strength train long enough, I mean, we've talked about this earlier on. You can't just get infinitely big, right? You're not going to just go lift cars or infinitely strong. However, at the same time, it's also the reason that when people talk about studies, you and I go, yeah, but what about isokinetic?
Right. It's like, yeah, with weights.
Exactly. Because the stimulus is limited and it is different. And so there's this comment I like, that it's like the dose makes the poison, right? If what's important is a great stimulus, you get a much higher dose without it being poisonous when you use isokinetics. But without isokinetic, you almost are either an ineffective dose or a dose that can be too high and then you get hurt and now it's poison, if that's fair to say.
Yeah.
And I know this is N equals one, but I've told this story a bunch of times and you've seen this way more often. I was training for a long time, 10 years.
You were in Rome.
I was in Rome using a lot of the great technology we use, getting into the HIIT camp. I even added some volume, because when you're trying to look at a population that's so diverse and you're looking at studies like, what about if we had some volume? Well, what if we just, no, it just needs to be HIIT. It's one time a week. But right. These guys are getting good at four times a week. And it's like,
right.
Yes, with weights, there is a lot of variations
yeah.
for these people. And that's why there's still two camps arguing about this thing.
Right.
As soon as I started training on isokinetic, using a DEXA scan, not skin calipers, I gained 10 pounds of muscle in 6 months. And right. When I brought that up to this group, it's like, we don't know what to do with that yet. So,
yeah, and that's a pretty common, I would guess, it's a pretty common impression that people get. This is another tool. It's pretty cool. But it's not going to get you, at the end of the day, anywhere different. All roads lead to Rome. What they're talking about is, we all have our genetic limits. You can't just keep getting bigger forever. It's like a muscle. It's like shaped like a football, let's say. And a muscle can never get wider than it is long. Otherwise, it couldn't contract.
Like blowing a balloon.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, and we also have tendon insertions that can't be altered. We have genetic limits. They think that people who lift weights for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years are near their genetic limit. Mm-hmm. The reason they think this is because they don't have any alternative tools other than weights, any other way to get even more mechanical loading, which is the primary stimulus for muscle growth. So if I didn't know about anything except weights, I would assume that weights, that's as good as you can get. And after 20 years, it's as big as I'm going to get. But I've seen it over and over and over and over again. Seasoned lifters who are at that stage where they're doing a pound a year would be great, thanks. All of a sudden, they try something like FastFit, an isokinetic device. All of a sudden, they have new levels of mechanical loading applied through their muscle fibers, tendons, ligaments. And all of a sudden, they start growing again. Why do they start growing again? Because your growth of strength and of muscle density and of muscle development is occurring in direct proportion to the mechanical loading and motor recruitment that the muscles receive. So if you get more of that, you're going to grow more.
Right.
So all roads lead to getting stronger. A lot of different ways to do it. But the differences between the progress over time with weights and with something like FastFit, the results arrive more rapidly. That's the first thing. Lower learning curve, so you can load up the muscles sooner. And it's a greater magnitude, so the results are more and they happen more quickly. And you end up in a better place at the end. Yeah. So it's like if Rome had foothills and then there's the nice neighborhood, like the Hollywood Hills. So yeah, all roads lead to Rome. But once you get there, how strong are you? How much? Correct. Yeah. And that's like you after how many years of lifting and focusing and doing this. And all of a sudden, I just added more mechanical loading under maximum motor recruitment, which is every rep with a FastFit machine. And all of a sudden, I got bigger. I grew.
Right.
Even though I thought I was in Rome. It's like, yeah, but let's go up to the nice houses. You know?
Exactly.
So, yeah, kind of all roads lead to Rome. But in order, and there's nobody who can get up to their genetic potential because everyone can always improve just a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's asymptotic. You can get 99% of the way there, point, whatever.
Right. Infinitely.
Infinitely. But you will hang out at a higher cruising altitude the higher your mechanical loading to which your body is subjected.
Yes.
So, I get why he would say that. Just because all he does, it's like, yeah, with weights.
Yeah, none of us.
All roads lead to Rome.
None of us know, yeah. So hopefully we'll do some more research on that in the future. But that kind of wraps up part two of this, which is how can isokinetics be adaptive resistance? And okay, great. I've heard of adaptive resistance, but these guys say that their machine's adaptive, but they call it digital weights and isotonic.
Right.
What should I know about that? And now you know.
That's right.
You should know to avoid them.
Right.
Like the plague.
And the defining rule is if the weight can be selected by the user or even pre-selected by the program, if the weight is pre-selected before you start in any way, it's not adapting to the user. It's not responding to you. And it therefore carries the risk of being inefficient or dangerous.
That's right. That's right. Cool. Well, this is really important. And if you're listening to this and you're like, I don't want the biggest muscles ever. We've talked about in some prior episodes.
Yeah, I don't want to get bulky. We have a whole episode on it.
Exactly. Yeah. What we are going to talk about in a future episode is just a reminder and something I'm seeing sort of right now in the trends on the TikTok world and all these things. I don't actually have TikTok,
kids
but
these days, you know?
People tell me.
Yeah.
Is sort of why it's really important that you do have as much muscle as you can as
right.
you age. And so we'll talk about that in the next one.
Amen.
All right, Jim.
Let's do it.
Thanks for tuning in to the Fast Fit Podcast. We hope you found today's episode inspiring and actionable. If you're ready to take the next step in your fitness journey, visit us at fastfit.com for more resources or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with someone who could benefit. Together, let's make exercise simple, empowering, and a part of a life well-lived. See you next time.